Good afternoon. I'm Ryan Veter. Welcome to my Dungeons & Dragons podcast. I'm sure you've listened to many podcasts where cool people play Dungeons & Dragons with each other. How did that make you feel? I'm sure it did. It made you feel very frustrated. You wanted to be one of those cool people. You wanted so badly to wield a magical trident and seduce a Gorgon. It bothered you immensely that other cooler people were having so much fun while you lay in bed helpless, forced to listen to their adventures, unable to say anything in response. This afternoon, you will live your dream. You will play Dungeons & Dragons. You will be the role player, and I will be your dungeon master. Do you want to play Dungeons & Dragons with me? I know. Let's begin. Before we can begin, you must construct your character. Get out a piece of paper and a pencil. You control who your character is. You control what your character does. Your character is an extension of your will, and your character is strong, capable. Your character is cool. What is your character's name? Can you think of something a little cooler than that? Okay, that works. Write down your character's name. What race is your character? Hold on, here are your choices. Elf. Your character can be an elf. Elves are willowy and dexterous. Their pointed ears have evolved to hear a twig snap from a furlong away. Elves are gorgeous. Elves are the perfect fantasy example of someone who is preternaturally graceful and quietly powerful. Do you want to be an elf? Well, don't make up your mind just yet. There are other choices. Halfling. Your character can be a halfling, which is like a hobbit. Halflings are small. Do you want to be a halfling? Kuo-Toa. Your character can be a Kuo-Toa. Kuo-Toa are horrible fish people with bulging eyes. Their skin is scaly and slippery. The Kuo-Toa race is dedicated to the evil goddess Blibdoolpulp, who dwells in the murky depths of the ocean. She demands offerings from her Kuo-Toa servitors in the form of pearls and lobsters and, ideally, human sacrifice. Do you want to be a Kuo-Toa? Snow Elf. Your character can be a snow elf. This is a kind of elf that I made up. Snow elves resemble regular elves in most respects, but their skin is eerily, icily white, and their breath always comes out as a visible fog no matter what the ambient temperature is. Snow elves also have resistance to cold damage, and they speak the Glacian language, which they share with ice elementals and frost giants. Do you want to be a snow elf? Do you remember which race you picked? Write it down. Next, you need to pick your character's class. Class, in Dungeons & Dragons parlance, means job. Some Dungeons & Dragons classes are Barbarian, Blackguard, Sorcerer, Runescribe, but you can't pick any of those. Here are the classes you can choose from. Cleric. Your character can be a cleric. Clerics are spellcasting warriors devoted to the faith of an imaginary Dungeons & Dragons deity like Vecna, or Lethander, or Blibdoolpulp, or the Raven Queen, or Zahir, or Avandra, or Melora, or Torm, or Kord, or Tharaz Dûn. Do you want to be a cleric? Monk. Your character can be a monk. Monks are martial artists who hone their bodies into flawless weapons. They jump around and twirl through the air and hit their enemies in their pressure points to make them keel over dead. Do you want to be a monk? Blackguard. I said earlier that you can't pick Blackguard, but I changed my mind. Your character can be a Blackguard. Blackguards are paladins who have broken their oaths. The powers they previously wielded in the service of justice are instead bent toward the Blackguard's own selfish desires, a lust for hideous revenge or violence for its own sake. Do you want to be a Blackguard? Valkyrie. Your character can be a Valkyrie. I made this one up too. Valkyries are beautiful warriors who fly into combat swinging shimmering and beautiful enchanted swords. A Valkyrie can bring an entire army to its knees merely by staring sternly across the battlefield. Do you want to be a Valkyrie? Have you made up your mind? What class did you choose? Okay. Write that down. Now you know who your character is and what your character does. Now you're ready for a Dungeons & Dragons adventure. You're excited. And you should be. Let's begin. Chapter 1. Your character is standing next to a pool of water. The water is transparent and motionless. The pool is surrounded by a thin border of tough, spiky, blue-green grass. A single palm tree stands to your character's left. This pool and its sparse attendant vegetation are surrounded by nothing but gray, lifeless desert. The air is stiflingly hot. If your character is a snow elf, you can see your own breath floating in front of you like a tiny cloud. What do you do? Okay, just as you're about to do that, you notice that your character is not alone. A humanoid shape is approaching the oasis. It seems to be a man. He seems to be on the brink of death. Death from thirst. He is too thirsty and desperate to notice you. While still several yards away from the water's edge, the man collapses into the gray, lifeless dust of the desert. What do you do? I should be more specific. Do you help the man or do you ignore him? You should probably write down what you do because it might be important later. If you help the man, I assume you do it by dragging him the last few yards to the edge of the oasis. He's unconscious. You flip him over and begin splashing water on his face. Then you see his face. It's a normal face, at first glance. But then you see that below his ear and going down the side of his neck, his normal human skin is instead a patch of lizard-like scales. His mouth is hanging open, and you notice that his tongue is forked like a snake's. This man must be a Yuan-Ti, which in Dungeons & Dragons is a kind of evil snake person. His eyes open, and you see his pupils are slits instead of dots. So if you help the man, then hold that thought. If you don't help the man, I assume you continue standing where you started, and you just stare at the man after he collapses into the gray, lifeless dust of the desert. Eventually, he summons enough strength to crawl the last few yards to the edge of the oasis. He tries to splash some water onto his face. You watch him struggle to save his own life. He scoops water into his mouth. He groans desperately as he pulls himself back from the brink of death. You watch him and you notice as you watch that below his ear and going down the side of his neck, his normal human skin is instead a patch of lizard-like scales. As he laps up the water, you notice that his tongue is forked like a snake's. This man must be a Yuan-Ti, which in Dungeons & Dragons is a kind of evil snake person. Then he looks over at you, and you see that his pupils are slits instead of dots. So now the branches of the story are merging back together, whether you help the man or not. We're all back on the same track from this point. The man looks up at you, and slowly his mind starts to piece itself back together from a state of delirious thirst. And he says, "Well, if you didn't help him," then he says, "why wouldn't you help me?" What do you say in response? Keep in mind, you can't say because you're an evil Yuan Ti, because in this version of events, you didn't know he was a Yuan Ti until after you decided not to help him. So what do you say? And while you're saying that, if you're a snow elf, then as you speak, your breath appears in front of you like an icy fog. Okay, and whether you help the snake man or not, he looks around the desert. Everywhere he casts his slitted eyes, he sees nothing but dust. This oasis is the only landmark in a sea of gray, lifeless dust. And he says, "Do you know where we are?" What do you say? Well, actually, you do know where you are, because you came to the Hesik Desert on a quest. If you're a cleric, you were given this quest in a vision from your god, and if you're a monk, you heard about the Hesik Desert from your aged master, and if you're a blackguard, you read about the desert in an ancient book from a library that you burnt down, and if you're a Valkyrie, then you were told about the Hesik Desert by a handsome stranger whose acquaintance you made during your travels, a spectacled gentleman who charmed you with the same ease with which you've always charmed everybody else, including him. The energy between the two of you was undeniable. It was beyond magic. It was destiny. But then, inevitably, you parted ways. But not before he told you that in the Hesik Desert there is a dungeon sunken beneath the dust that is the final recorded resting place of the Stone of Ravis. But you don't tell the Snake Man that. You just say, "This is the Hesik Desert." If you're writing this down, Hesik is spelled H-E-S-I-K-H, and Ravis, as in the Stone of Ravis, is R-A-V-Y-S. The man nods vacantly, as if he already knew that, but he had momentarily lost track of what desert he was in when he almost died. Then he says, "How did you get here?" What do you say? He nods. He says, "Do you want to know how I got here?" What do you say? Well, he tells you. He says, "I was cast out of my tribe because I refused to devour a human child. The chieftain said my snake heart was too corrupted by human empathy, and that I must wander the desert to let the snake god Zahir decide my fate. You feel touched by the un-Yuan-Ti-like kindness of this Yuan-Ti's story. If you're a cleric of Zahir, you feel additional sympathy because you know how merciless the snake god's commandments are." The snake man says, "My name's Lesker." If you're taking notes, that's L-E-S-S-S-K-E-R. He goes on to say, "What's yours?" What do you say? He nods. An awkward silence ensues. What do you do? Lesker says, "If we team up, we may stand a better chance of surviving out here." What do you say? That was Lesker talking. What do you say? So this is going to be a big branch in the story. You've got to choose between joining up with Lesker or not joining up with Lesker. Write down what your choice is. Chapter 2A. This is the chapter for if you said you would not join up with Lesker. If you said you would join up with Lesker, then just sit tight, we'll get to you later. So, if you're a Valkyrie, then obviously you have the charisma and the kind of magnetic personality that it takes to let Lesker down easy. If you're not a Valkyrie, then when you tell Lesker that you think it's better for the two of you to each go it alone, he narrows his snake eyes at you and says something kind of ambiguous in response, like, "Maybe you're right." And then the two of you take off in opposite directions across the desert. You're walking alone in the desert. What do you do? If you look behind you to see if Lesker is following, you don't see anything. It's so hot and quiet. The desert of Hesik isn't made of sand or sandy dirt. It's all dust, as far as you can see. Gray, lifeless dust. You contemplate the dust as you walk. What do you think about the dust? You say something out loud about the dust. What do you say?
Just as you're about to say that, you hear something behind you, and you turn around and Lesker is there, leaping out to attack you, so you're gonna fight. You need a weapon. If you're a cleric, your weapon is a mace. If you're a monk, your weapon is obviously your hands. If you're a blackguard, your weapon is a red axe with a huge jewel in the pommel. And if you're a Valkyrie, you have a shimmering, beautiful, enchanted sword named Nordgraf. Meanwhile, Lesker has a weapon too. It's a scythe. Well, no, you would have noticed him carrying a scythe earlier. He has a little dagger that he must have hidden in his clothes, but it's a mean-looking dagger, and he's coming right at you with it. And this is normally where we'd get out the dice, but I don't have my dice handy. And you probably don't have dice if you're listening to this in bed. So instead, here's how this will work. You think of a number. A number between 1 and, let's say, 6. And I'll try to guess what you're thinking. This will represent mechanically the way Lesker is trying to guess the best way to slice you to death with his dagger. So get a number in mind. Say it out loud. Did you say 5? If I guessed right, that means Lesker slices you good. Keep track of whether you've been sliced or not. Write it down. And now it's your turn. You're going to retaliate with your hands or your evil axe or whatever. I'll think of a number between 1 and 6. Actually, I'll think of a number between 1 and 4 to give you a bit of an advantage in case your character has an enchanted sword. Okay, I have the number in mind. Now you say the number that you think I'm thinking of. The number that I was thinking of was 2. Did you say 2? If you said 2, then you get back at Lesker with a swing of whatever you're swinging around, and he jumps back and hisses at you furiously. If you said something else, you missed him. Either way, make sure you're keeping track of what's going on. The sun is setting, so you're both lit up all orange, and there are 2 long shadows cast across the dust. Then Lesker lunges at you again with his dagger, so think of another number between 1 and 6. Say it out loud, this is Lesker attacking you. Did you say 5? I figured you probably wouldn't expect me to guess 5 again. Well, if I guessed right, then Lesker sliced you again, or for the first time, depending. You have to keep track of this. You should be writing all of this down. And now you get a turn, and again, I'm going to think of a number between 1 and 4. But if you're not a Valkyrie, then you're supposed to guess a number between 1 and 6. And don't cheat. Pick a number the right way. This is you attacking Lesker. Before you say your number out loud, I want you to describe out loud the way that you attack Lesker. Make it sound really cool. But don't say whether you actually hit him, because we haven't determined that yet. Okay. Now say your number out loud. Did you say 4? If you said 4, then you sliced Lesker, or you smash him, whatever it's appropriate to your weapon. If you said any other number, then no dice, so to speak. So you've hit Lesker between 0 and 2 times, and he's hit you between 0 and 2 times. Now we have to evaluate the results of that battle and see who won and what happens next. But first, we have to go back to before the fight to see what happens to the other people who were cooperative and didn't invite Lesker's wrath. We're doing this breadth first. Chapter 2B. This is the chapter for if you said you would join up with Lesker. The two of you hang out by the oasis for a while so that Lesker can recover his strength. It's still very hot, though. If you're a Kuo-Toa, you can splash around in the pool to cool off and replenish your slimy skin. If you're a halfling, you can rest in the shade of the palm tree more efficiently because you're so short. If you're a snow elf, your innate chill automatically imbues you with protection from the heat. As the afternoon passes, you remember there's kind of a problem with you joining up with Lesker, because you don't necessarily want him to know about your quest for the Stone of Ravis, and his goal is probably to get out of the desert and go somewhere safe, so this is tricky. What do you do? Yeah. Okay, so it becomes dark. And Lesker says that now is the time to get on the move when the sun isn't out. So you take off across the gray, lifeless dust. Above you are the stars. But they're not the stars of the real world. They're the imaginary stars of the world of Dungeons and Dragons. Depending on your race, you might be able to see in the dark. Elves have some dark vision because they're so used to peering through the woods at intruders. Kuo-Toa have dark vision because they live underground. Snow elves have superior dark vision that's almost like infrared or thermal imaging because of being able to detect a source of heat is so critical in the icy mountains where snow elves are from. But Yuan-Ti have dark vision too, so Lesker sees something up ahead as you come over the crest of a dune of gray dust. He stops and he points across the desert at a shape. He says, "I think that might be a shelter or something." So you trudge on over to the thing he saw, and as you get closer, you see it's a crude stone shelter that someone has built in the middle of the desert. And you get even closer, and you think about the quest that you got from your god, or your ninja master, or that book, or that handsome guy, and you realize this must be the entrance to the dungeon where the Stone of Ravis is. What do you do? Well, I'm going to say, just for the sake of simplifying things, that you tell Lesker about your quest, and you tell him that you suspect that this shelter up ahead is the entrance to the dungeon you're looking for, and Lesker is cool with this. And when you get to the structure, you see that it is indeed built on top of a tunnel that descends into the gray earth beneath the Hesik Desert. So it's really looking like your intuition was spot on. The two of you look down in the tunnel. It's pitch black down there. If you're a halfling, you light a torch. What do you do? Let me put it this way. Do you want to go down into the dungeon? Well, if you decide to descend into the dungeon, then Lesker goes with you. If you decide not to enter the dungeon, Lesker will remind you that this is the whole reason you're here, and he already agreed to go with you on this quest, and you can't turn back now, and then if necessary, he will grab your arm and drag you down into the dungeon area. Okay, you're in a dungeon. A maze of twisting corridors descending into the earth. The walls are carved with ancient images and esoteric symbols. It's all so old that neither you nor Lesker can guess at what message the creatures who cut the stone were trying to convey. Is it a welcome? Is it a warning? You're walking down another hallway. Lesker is grazing his hands over the carvings as he walks. His fingernails are long and yellow and pointed. As his eyes trace the engravings, they almost seem to glow in the dark with... Do Yuan-Ti eyes glow in the dark? I'd have to check. I don't know if it says in the monster manual whether the eyes glow in the dark. Anyway, when he touches one particular engraving, the floor suddenly shifts beneath you and you fall into a pit. Oh my gosh, you're at the bottom of a pit. It's dark. I guess it was dark before. It's the same. You look around for Lesker. He's checking his extremities to see if he's broken anything. You should do that too, but it's up to you. What do you do? Okay. While you're doing that, Lesker is looking around for a way out of the pit. He sees something behind you. His eyes get all wide and he starts to back away. What do you do? Well, you turn around to see what's behind you, and you see a creature emerging from the rubble. It's a bug, like a centipede, but it's the size of an anaconda, and it's crawling over to you, and its pincers are clacking together, and it's making this awful hissing noise. What do you do? I mean, obviously you're supposed to fight the centipede, but we just did all that combat in the other story branch, and I don't think we have time to go through that again. So we'll say you and Lesker fight the centipede together, and you kill it. So now you're in a pit with Lesker and a bunch of rubble and a dead centipede. What do you do? Specifically, to get you and Lesker out of this pit, what do you do? I'm going to give you some extra time in case you're having trouble thinking. Just say something. Sorry if you already said something and I'm bugging you about coming up with something. I have to account for everyone. Sorry. Okay, well, that plan works, and now you and Lesker are out of the pit, back in the hallways of the dungeon. This is a good time for you to have a conversation with Lesker.
What do you want to talk about? What do you think Lesker would have to say about that? And what would you say in response? So, you wend your way through the dungeon corridors, careful not to touch anything that might trigger another trap, and then you pass through an archway into a chamber. At the center of the chamber is a pedestal. On top of the pedestal is the Stone of Ravis. It's just as your quest giver described it. It's an irregular pearlescent stone about the size of a bowling ball, and the magical power it radiates makes the whole chamber feel warm and tingly. What do you do? I'm going to assume you said you'd check for traps. There are no traps. What do you do after that? Well, yes, obviously you take the stone. It's lighter than it looks. Actually, as you pick it up, you feel incredibly light, because you've finally succeeded in your quest. The Stone of Ravis is yours. Lesker is standing nearby admiring the stone. The stone is glittering, and it makes Lesker's eyes glitter as well, and mystical patterns of light are playing across both your faces. Lesker asks, "May I hold it?" What do you do? Well, hold on, because we have to go back to the other branch. Chapter 3A1. This branch is for people who won the battle with Lesker. If you fought Lesker and you had more victories against him than he had against you, meaning if you guess what number I was thinking more often than I guess what number you were thinking, then this is what happens. With another bash of your mace or your axe or your hand or your enchanted sword, Lesker falls to the dusty ground. He clearly realizes he is no match for the likes of you. If you're a halfling, he's wondering how such a puny humanoid could have defeated him. If you're not a halfling, he's somewhat less surprised, but still, he assumed he was going to beat you, so things haven't turned out the way he expected regardless. But Lesker also knows that this is the end of the line for him, so he grimaces up at you and he says, "Go ahead, finish me off. I've got nothing left to do, and you've got your weapon in your hand, or your weapon is your hand, and he's in no position to fight back any longer. What do you do?" If you're a blackguard, it would really be in character for you to murder him right now. Are you gonna murder him? Are you sure? Okay. Well, if you decide to murder him, then you bring down whatever your weapon is, and you violently end Lesker's life. He has hissed his last. If you decide not to murder him, you can say something cool like, "You're not worth the exercise," or something, and he'll crawl away and disappear. But if you're a blackguard, you really should have killed him. Either way, now you're alone in the desert, which is exactly how your adventure started. What a fitting conclusion. Maybe it seems circular and kind of pointless, but I think we'd agree that you learned something, right? You've grown as a character. Definitely. The End. Chapter 3A2. This is the chapter for if you lost your battle against Lesker. If you fought Lesker but you had fewer victories against him than he had against you, then this is what happens. Lesker pushes you over. You fall on your back. Your weapon falls out of your grip, except for Monk's. And now Lesker has two things. He has his dagger and he has the upper hand. But before he kills you, he says, "I tricked you good. You believe that dumb story about me getting kicked out of the Yuan-Ti for having a conscience, you stupid elf or halfling or Kuotoa or snow elf. It was all a trick, all along. I'm one of the Yuan-Ti Pharaoh's most trusted assassins, and he sent me after you to prevent you from claiming the Stone of Ravis, and you completely fell into my trap. I just thought you should know all that before I kill you. Is there anything you wanted to say to me?" So now you have a little time to say something back to him. Well, he only gives you so much time before he completes his objective of
killing you, and now you're just a dead body in the middle of the desert. The end! Sorry, but that's how Dungeons & Dragons goes sometimes. Anyway. Chapter 3A3. This is the chapter for if you tie against Lesker. If you guessed what number I was thinking exactly as many times as I guessed what number you were thinking, then this is what happens. The two of you are equally beat up, or equally unscratched, and Lesker is impressed. He drops his dagger. He puts up his hands. He says, "You're an amazing warrior. I completely underestimated you. Let's just call it a draw, right? What do you say?" Well, you probably say, "Sure, okay," and you lower your weapon, I'm assuming. And Lesker says, "You know, I was trying to trick you before, but now I really, truly do respect you. I think we should team up for real this time. What do you say?" Well, if you say yes, then you can go back to Chapter 2B and see how that works out. If you say no, then I guess Lesker will go off on his own. I don't think he'd try to sneak up on you and kill you again. That wouldn't be very smart. Or we can decide to say that you say yes, and you give up on your own quest, and you and Lesker figure out something new to do together, and that's the end of the story. The end! Chapter 3B1. This is the chapter for, once you found the Stone of Ravis, if you decide not to let Lesker hold it. Keep in mind that in this story branch, you haven't found out that his mission all along was to keep you from getting the stone. To roleplay correctly, you have to make your decisions without referring to outside information. And if you think about it, in this story branch, Lesker helped you find the dungeon entrance. He helped you fight the giant centipede. He probably helped you get out of that pit. He's been completely trustworthy up to this point. So in this scenario, it's actually kind of rude and uncalled for when you say, "No, I should probably be the one to handle the Stone of Ravis. It's very fragile," or whatever you say. And Lesker acts all sullen as you make your way back to the dungeon entrance. Is it just because you were mean to him for no reason? Or is there something more sinister behind his disappointment? It's impossible to tell. But then you take the Stone of Ravis back from the desert, and that means you won! Congratulations! The end! Chapter 3B2. This is the chapter for if you decide to let Lesker hold the stone. You say something like, "Sure," because by now he's just as much a part of this quest as you are, and it's completely reasonable to let him share in the spoils. But once he has the Stone of Ravis in his snaky mitts, he elbows you in the face, and you go down hard on the dungeon floor, and he runs away with the stone. And as he runs, he triggers another one of those nasty traps, and the dungeon begins to rumble and claps as you struggle to get back to your feet. Are you gonna die in this dungeon? Probably. Yeah. The end. But if you're a snow elf, then your eyes are adapted to read tiny changes in people's body temperature, even the cold-blooded skin of a Yuan-Ti. So, if we back up a bit, you're able to detect that Lesker is up to something when he reaches out to get his snaky mitts on the Stone of Ravis, and you hesitate in that moment. But Lesker snatches the stone out of your hands and runs off and triggers a trap, and you die anyway. The end. But if you're a Valkyrie, then you and your sword, Nordgraf, have a psychic connection. So when you sense that something is wrong, Nordgraf is ready in that critical fraction of a second when Lesker reaches out and you and Nordgraf are like a single body with a single mind as you slice Lesker in half, preventing him from stealing the incredibly precious Stone of Ravis. And from there, you can carry the stone out of the dungeon without any trouble. The end. Thank you for playing.